So next up is Ronald Richmond, who is also joining us online because he's sick. Hopefully you're feeling a little bit better, Ron. And his presentation is going to be on the accurate and explainable mortality forecasting with a local GLM net. To introduce Ron, Ron is the chief actuary at Old Mutual Insure, where he's responsible for oversight of all actuarial activities in the OMI group. Ron is a fellow of the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries and the Actuarial Society of South Africa. He holds practicing certificates in short-term insurance and life insurance from ASSA, and a master's in philosophy in actuarial science with distinction from the University of Cape Town. He chairs the Actuarial Society of South Africa's Climate Change Committee, and he is a member of the ASTIN, or Actuarial Studies in Non-Life Insurance, I had to look that up, board. Over to you, Ron. Thank you so much, and we're looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Thank you very much for the warm introduction. Can I just confirm you can both hear me and see my slides?
Okay, I think we can see it. Yeah, we can see it. Thanks.
Okay, you can see that. Okay, so thanks a lot to the LAC for giving me an opportunity to present this work, and I hope everyone will find it interesting. I'll speak for about 35 minutes, and hopefully you can have some questions at the end. So maybe just an introductory slide. Why should we actually care about mortality forecasting, which is really the theme of this presentation? So in my view, and maybe this would be another good debate topic, should South African actuaries care more about mortality forecasting than we do? Well, here's my answer saying yes. Mortality modeling and forecasting is very fundamental to managing any portfolio of risks where you have some linkage to mortality, whether that's annuities, exposure to longevity, or risk products that have exposure to mortality or morbidity for that matter. Mortality forecasting is a very significant topic in overseas markets, and at the bottom of the slide, I've quoted from the most recent continuous mortality investigations model, frequently asked questions from the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries, so they spend a lot of time on this in the UK, and it's very topical there, particularly as they try to ascertain future levels of mortality improvements post-COVID. So do we need to give more emphasis to this in the South African context? One answer saying no would be, well, we've got much higher interest rates, so your longevity assumption is maybe offset more or less by the high rates that you earn over time. But if you think about IFRS 17 and the requirements for quantitative risk adjustments and the fact that SAM and ORSA requirements make you, or at least on paper, require you to justify the using the standard formula, and all of these things depend on the uncertainty of the forecasts that you make, my answer would be we definitely should care a little bit more. And what I'll be doing in the next three slides is just surveying some recent work on mortality forecasting in the South African context. So this is a very nice paper by Greg Whittaker, published it in two editions of the South African Actuarial Journal ago, so in 2021. And what he tries to do is project forward the historical South African life tables using a specially modified Lee Carter method. And what motivated this piece of work is it's important for damages applications to have life tables that are free from the effect of HIV and AIDS. So you can see some of his projections on the bottom left-hand part of the slide. It all looks very nice and clean and regular, and that's what happens when you project using the Lee Carter model. And Greg's recommendation is that ASSA commission some research into new population mortality tables. And if I'm allowed to use this soapbox to say I think that would be a very good idea, well, then that's what I'd like to do. Here's another piece of work that I did with Gary from Alexander Forbes. We published this in 2020 and presented this at the ASSA convention. We had a large pensioner data set kindly contributed by one of the large pensions administration companies. And what was great about this data is we had some way of working out a proxy for socioeconomic class, and this is becoming very important in international mortality studies. What we did is we then fit some models to this data set, and the results of mortality improvement rates from these models is shown on the right-hand part of the slide. Basically, as the vertical panels are going from 2010 to 2019, as you go from the top to the bottom of the slide, you've got the lower socioeconomic class, and then number four is the best all is everything combined. And then you've got ages from 50 all the way up to 100. And you can see a remarkable thing on this slide, and I'm just going to point out some things with this pointer, that if the dots are above this zero line, it means mortality is actually worsening. So let's have a quick interpretation of what this top panel over here means. This is for the lives with the smallest pension income, which we're using as our proxy to socioeconomic class. In 2010, mortality rates for females were getting worse, while mortality rates for males were getting better. By the time we got to 2019, mortality rates for males were also starting to worsen. So the rate of change of mortality improvement is actually moving in the wrong direction. And this is a feature that's maintained across this whole data set. So this is a big problem. If mortality rates are worsening, that's not something you want to see ever, pretty much in my view. And this is before COVID. Obviously, it goes up to 2019. What we also did in this particular piece of work was look at the SAM calibration of mortality and longevity stresses and showed that SAM was not well calibrated for this particular data set. So very interesting to ask, what is the industry view on an IFRS 17 risk adjustment for mortality and longevity trend risk in when you've got evidence like this presented. The final paper I'd like to mention, sorry, this is another one of mine. This was my master's thesis at UCT. This was under Professor Rob Dorrington's supervision, and we try to reconstruct the old age population from corrected population death data. And basically, this gave us mortality rates from 1985 to 2011 for the old age population. Those mortality rates are shown by population group on the bottom right-hand part of the slide. While I find it distasteful to present actuarial results that are broken out by race, it's the best indicator that you have in the population data of different socioeconomic levels, and it's also important to understand what is happening in different populations, so be it. On the bottom left-hand part of the slide, we've got mortality rates, rates of mortality improvement per annum, and you can see, unfortunately, that not much was happening at a national level. Females were only slightly improving since 1985. Males were improving a little bit more, but there are very worrying results in the more granular analysis by population group, which suggests that indeed old age mortality might not be improving. So this challenges a couple of assumptions we often make when valuing annuity business and what we do when we're valuing, say, DB pensions. So what is this talk going to be about? I hope these slides have convinced at least someone in the audience that mortality forecasting is indeed important in the South African context. I'll be just talking through an introduction to the local GLMNet paradigm of modeling by talking through some of the tools that we've used in this work. We'll then talk through the local GLMNet itself, which is a flexible and explainable machine learning model. We'll then, in the next part of the talk, discuss how to do mortality forecasting with the local GLMNet and show that this relatively simple and explainable model has actually got state-of-the-art forecasting performance, and then we can draw some conclusions. So the local GLMNet is based on some work I've been very lucky to do with Mario Wittrich, and the particular paper I'm presenting to you today is done with some Italian colleagues as well, Francesco Perla, Salvatore Scognomiglio, as well as Mario Wittrich from Switzerland, and the paper accompanying this presentation, I believe the LAC will make freely available. So just a bit of an introduction, the current non-life industry approach when you've got data-rich technical pricing situations is to use generalized linear models, which are basically just linear regression models with some fancy variance assumptions. What the local GLMNet does that we're presenting today, it maintains the familiar structure of regression models, which means this is all nice and explainable, but you can fit these in an automated manner and it's significantly more accurate than traditional regression models. So the key principle we'll be working with on the bottom left-hand part of the slide is we're going to use a neural network to predict a GLM or to predict a regression model for each record that we have in our data set. And using this predicted GLM, we can then make forecasts. So hopefully this will all become very clear in a couple of slides time. And if it's not, please feel free to interrupt me and ask any questions that you may have. So maybe I can just ask Gail, whoever else is watching the question and answers, please feel free to tell me if there's a question and we can take those. So deep neural networks are very successful in multiple machine learning domains. If you've played around with ChatGPT, you'll know that, in fact, you can now ask a neural network why deep neural networks have been successful. So maybe the best example of this paradigm of modeling working is in natural language processing. It's also very successful in tabular data modeling and time series modeling, which is very close to what a lot of actuarial work looks like, at least in some areas of life insurance and in short-term insurance. But the big problem with these networks is they're very difficult to interpret, so they're not explainable. While there are some post hoc methods for explaining machine learning models, and some of these are partial dependence plots or shapely additive explanations, the problem with these machine learning explainability models is they often make unrealistic assumptions about how your data is structured. And by making those unrealistic assumptions, you can actually come up with the wrong sort of explanation for why your model is doing what it's doing. So the overall problem statement is, can we benefit from predictive accuracy of deep neural networks while maintaining explainable model structures? And the answer to this is the local GLMNet. So let's look at a couple of the tools we'll be using in this presentation. On the right-hand part of the slide, what I'm showing is a very simple neural network. Each circle represents a variable. So the circles on the left-hand part of the diagram represent your input variables. The circle on the right-hand part of the diagram represents your outputs. And these connections represent your regression weights. So this diagram is really nothing more than a simple regression model where you've got inputs. You multiply those inputs by some regression parameters, and that gives you your output. Making this much more interesting is deep neural networks. So on the right-hand part of the slide, we've now got an example of a deep feed-forward neural network. So what it means to say that this network is deep is you've got these many layers of variables which come between the input variables and the output variable. And this is where the magic of neural networks happens. Basically, these intermediate or hidden layers learn a new representation of the data that you feed in to the network. And this new representation is optimized in such a way that it's really good for making predictions. So let's give this a simple life insurance interpretation. Let's say you've got a whole bunch of different portfolios you'd like to do a mortality analysis for, and you've got your normal variables, maybe age, gender, smoking status, underwriting loadings, or anything like that. And by feeding in those variables into this network, it's going to learn what those variables mean in the context of a mortality forecasting example, and it will be able to project mortality using those variables after you pass them through this network. That's really the key idea. I'd just like to talk about one other type of network that's going to be important for this mortality forecasting example, and this sort of network is called a convolutional neural network. The basic idea of a convolutional neural network is it's able to work out what sort of images you feed into the network. And the way this works is, let's say you have an image. I've got a very crude Excel-based image of the digit 2. Hopefully that does look like a 2 to someone in the audience at least. And then what you do is you look at the numerical representation of this image in this sort of data matrix. What you then do is you apply filters, which is basically like a mini regression equation to different patches of this image. And by applying those filters to this image, you come up with a new set of data, which can then be used for prediction. So again, let's turn this into a life insurance focused example. Imagine instead of the digit 2, you've got 10 years of mortality curves in this image. What you would use a convolutional neural network to do is learn interesting features from this diagram and then make a prediction maybe of next year's mortality. And that's exactly what we're going to be doing today in the context of this discussion. Why do I think deep neural networks are a really powerful paradigm for actuarial prediction tasks? If you look on the right-hand part of the slide, you'll see a diagrammatic representation of the deep neural network that we had before. And what I'd like to focus on is just this end piece of the network. If you remember the simple diagram that we showed right at the beginning of our discussion of the different tools in this presentation, you'll see that this is nothing more than a linear model. So every deep neural network is really a regression model that's been tacked onto a much bigger component, which is the feature extractor. So all a deep neural network is just a regression model on top of some fancy feature engineering or feature extraction from your input data. And because actuaries are very good at using generalized linear models, and we'll also discuss some examples of this in the life insurance context in a bit, I think this is a very good paradigm for use in these sorts of tasks. Just something about explainability. What can some of the problems be when you use a black box model, besides for the fact that you won't be able to explain to your CEO, your actuarial committee, or the regulator exactly what the model is doing? There's a very nice breakdown of problems with machine learning explainability that we took from a recent paper. And these problems are simulatability. In other words, whereas a normal or traditional actuarial model is easy to comprehend the model as a whole, with black box models, it's not so easy. Decomposability. So most actuarial models, you can deep dive into each component of the model and inspect that and make sense of it, whereas that's not really possible with black box models. And then finally, algorithmic transparency. If you're trying to audit a cash flow projection model, you can very easily understand how cash flows have been projected and make a call if that's reasonable. Unfortunately, with black box models, you can't. So what we'll be moving towards in the second part of this presentation is the local GLM net, which remains explainable while still being very accurate. I'm just looking at the questions. I see an anonymous question in the Forbes paper. I guess that's maybe not the correct characterization of the paper because we haven't disclosed where the data set is from. Is the rate of mortality improvement reducing or the mortality rate itself? So for some populations, just to go back to the slide from the paper with Gary, the rate of mortality improvement itself is becoming worse. So in other words, we're moving towards a mortality worsening position. But what was very worrying for me is that in 2019, mortality rates themselves were getting worse for the female population overall in this data set. You can see that over there. So as long as you're above zero, that means mortality rates are getting worse each year. Then the direction of travel shows you what's happening to these rates of mortality improvement themselves. So I hope that answers the question on that particular piece. Okay, let's move back to where we were in the deck. Okay, so the local GLM net. So what we said before is that regression models are really a current industry approach to data-rich technical pricing. And it's very interesting that also in life insurance, GLMs are very popular if you want to graduate mortality tables. So most often in the UK and South Africa, when you're graduating mortality table, you'll use a complex GLM model. Our American colleagues prefer to use something called Whittaker-Henderson smoothing, which is a slightly different paradigm. And really, what GLMs try to do is say, what are the best estimate outcomes from a particular modeling task, given your covariates, and like we said before, that could be a type of product, or age, or gender, or smoking status, while making the right distributional assumptions for the errors. I'm not going to talk about that too much. But the key thing to remember is, all a GLM is, it's nothing more than a combination of your inputs, which we're representing as XJ on this formula, and regression coefficients. So what's very nice about these types of models, like we said before, is the coefficients of each covariate are clearly identifiable, and therefore the effect of each covariate on the outcome you're trying to predict can directly be identified. And what we've also said is neural networks are also similar to GLMs. This was the key takeaway in the previous slides. All neural networks do is do a bunch of feature extraction for you, and you then use those features in a new linear model. And that brings us to the local GLM net, which is really the technique we're going to be applying to forecast mortality. And as we said before, really what the main idea is, we'd like to predict a new linear regression model for each record in your data set using a neural network. And what this does is you keep all the advantages of explainability, but you have a massive gain in predictive accuracy by allowing your coefficients to vary according to the needs of each record. I'm not going to bore you too much with the maths, but just if you look at this equation I'm just highlighting with the pointer now, basically what you have is, instead of having fixed regression coefficients that you fit once for your portfolio and don't change, you now have regression coefficients that vary for each combination of covariates that you feed into the network. This varying coefficient beta x is called the regression attention, and this tells you how much weight to give each covariate or give each variable in your data set. And for those of you who've been following ChatGPT and have been looking into how these models work, you'll know that ChatGPT stands for Chat General Purpose Transformer, and this idea of attention is really core to the transformer part of ChatGPT models. So let's just have a quick overview in a diagrammatic format of the difference between a neural network and the local GLM net. As we said before, each circle represents a variable. The ones at the top of the network in this case is what you feed in, and the intermediate circles are where the neural network does its magic and learns new representations of your data, and the final output variable is the prediction that you're making. A neural network basically takes in your input data, does a bunch of fancy stuff in the middle and makes a prediction. What the local GLM net does, which is on the right-hand part of the slide, you feed in your data, it makes a prediction of regression coefficients, and once you multiply those regression coefficients with your input variable, that gives you your prediction. And because you can exactly inspect your input data, your regression coefficients, and understand the product of these things, that tells you exactly how your network is working. So if this part on the machine learning is particularly boring, I apologize, we'll get to the mortality piece in about 3 or 4 minutes. But just what I'd like to do before we go there is just show a simple synthetic example of how the local GLM net works on a very complex function. So what we did is we made up 8 variables. We generated an outcome using a complex combination of these variables. There's a linear term, there's a quadratic term, there's a horrible interaction there, and a bunch of other horrible interactions over here. And we also made sure that some of our variables were correlated with each other, which is very often what you find. For example, the type of product that you're buying in life insurance will be correlated with the socioeconomic status of the lives being insured. What we did is we fit a local GLM net using least squares. And what we're just plotting at the bottom of the slide is what should the true predictions have been versus what were the predictions made by a model. Here's a normal GLM. You can see there's not entirely a great relationship between the true and the GLM predictions, but the local GLM net all lies on a 45-degree line. And that, what that means is as you make a prediction using the local GLM net, you can be pretty well assured that it's correct, and that means that we fit things accurately. This is what the regression attention looks like. So if you remember this equation, this is just a linear term. This is a quadratic term. And the attention over here is flat for the linear term. It's a line for the quadratic term. And all of these horrible interactions get much fancier shapes. And this is how your network adapts itself in such a manner as to be able to fit this very complex data set. And this is what happens if you multiply your features, which is your variables, through by your attention. And you can see we've exactly mirrored the equation. So a half x1, that's a pretty good line for a half x1, a quadratic term, and a quadratic term in the contributions. And really, the point to take away from all of this is we've now got a very effective way of understanding exactly how the model is using the input variables to make its predictions. Just going to stop there and check if there's any questions from the audience. Nothing yet. So now let's talk about mortality forecasting with this explainable machine learning model, and this is the main part of what I'd like to present to you today. So in mortality forecasting, one of the foundational models for doing this is the Lee Carter model. And this model does something really smart. It says if you want to understand your mortality rate at age X in a year T, what you need to do is work out what's your average mortality at your age X, and what is the rate of change of mortality over time, and that rate of change is BX multiplied by what is happening in each year, and this is KT. So this is perhaps the most classic mortality forecasting model that you get, and what it allows you to do is separate any matrix or any set of mortality observations into these three components, which is your average mortality rate, your rate of change or your age-specific improvement rate, and a time index. And once you've done that, you can project the time index forward, and that helps you project mortality rates. This is a really clever thing in terms of the model formulation. because you only need to estimate a few parameters. And the way that you go into estimating this is not something I'm going to really talk about today. What I'm going to show you on this slide is a view of how has mortality forecasting evolved in the deep neural network age. So there's been a lot of work on this, both in industry and in academia in the past 5 years. And this is just almost the evolutionary process that's been followed. Some people said, once you've got this Lee-Carter model, can't you just forecast the coefficients using deep neural networks? This is almost where it all started. Some people then said, let's get rid of the Lee-Carter model and just forecast mortality rates directly from almost the sort of data that we'd use every day in a mortality investigation. Some people then went further and said, if you look at mortality rates, and I'm indicating the part of the slide that shows this, mortality rates are basically just a time series. So can we actually fit models directly to a time series of mortality rates and extrapolate those forward? This was an example of how you could do that with Swiss mortality, and about 2 or 3 years ago, I was given the opportunity to present this to the LAC. A slightly different way of doing a very similar thing is, let's say you stack all of your mortality up into a diagram that looks like this. Let's say you put 10 years of observed mortality stacked year by year going down, and you also put mortality rates at each day age going from left to right. Could you perhaps process what you could almost imagine as an image of mortality rates using a neural network? And it turned out that was very possible. And what we're going to be explaining today at the bottom of this evolutionary process is, how can you make an explainable forecast of mortality rates from the sort of image of mortality? So here's the main idea in a nutshell, and we're just going to work through this together, if that's okay. So the first thing to do is get your matrix of mortality rates like we showed before. And what we're then going to do is fit a local GLM net to this image of mortality rates. So the output of the local GLM net, if you remember what we said before, is going to be some regression coefficients. So in other words, we're going to process your mortality rates to fit a regression model. And once you've done that, you have what you see on the extreme right-hand part of the slide. You'll have a bunch of mortality coefficients, and you'll have a bunch of observed mortality rates. These are, the coefficients are going to be in yellow, the observed mortality rates are going to be in blue. And basically what you're going to do is you're going to multiply these together to get a prediction of the future mortality rates. So just talking a little bit more about what that means, we're going to say what was our observed mortality at age zero in the past 10 years. And we're going to have a time series forecasting model, which is represented by these coefficients derived for each age, which is going to tell you how should you best forecast these mortality rates. And that's eventually what's going to produce your forecast of mortality rates in the next year. What's very important about this is you can see exactly how you're making your forecasts, because all you're doing, you're saying, this is what we observed. And let's say you observe a bit of a bump in a particular year. You'd say, that's not good, that's going to mess up my forecast. And you can make manual adjustments to the basis that you're going to use to forecast these mortality rates. So this is the idea in a nutshell. I hope it makes a little bit of sense. But just to summarize, I'm going to take an image of observed mortality rates, fit a regression model to it. That regression model is going to tell us how exactly we should make forecasts using these coefficients. And we're going to multiply those through by your observed mortality rates to give you some forecasts. Let's just discuss this in a little bit more detail. What we've mentioned over the course of this presentation is two different approaches to mortality forecasting. The Lee-Carter model, which is really summarize your data into a simpler form, which is your average rates, your rate of change, and the time index, and you forecast the summary. Or you can take a time series model and extrapolate rates forward. What we're doing in this model we're presenting today is saying, let's combine these ideas. Use your data to find coefficients of a time series model to make your forecasts. And hopefully that helps to explain exactly what we're going to be doing. So what is the data we'll be demonstrating this on? This is the Italian mortality data from the Human Mortality Database from 1950 all the way up to 2010. You can see a lot of things you'd expect. Mortality rates have been improving. There's been dramatic improvement at the teenage ages. These days, you really don't have an accident bump anymore, and mortality rates are also improving at the old ages. And the way that we're going to deal with this data in this forecasting setup is train all of our models from 1950 to 1999 and see how well we forecast on data the network hasn't seen from the year 2000 to the year 2018. We're also going to do the same for the United States mortality database. This gives you subnational populations for the 50 states and the District of Columbia. We're also going to follow the same idea of fitting on a training set and testing it on out-of-sample data. A few quick model details. What's really nice about the local GLMnet, it's really simple. So you can write this model in only 7 lines of code. We'll fit the model by minimizing the mean square error, which basically says you want your observations and your predictions to be close to each other. And we'll use something called regularization to ensure that your model fits well. And regularization is something that basically forces the model coefficients to behave well. I'm not going to go into that in too much detail. And then finally, we'll compare this to the original Lee Carter model and the black box, some of the black box models I mentioned before. Let's look at some nice results over here. These are results of the regression attention. So just to give some context, these regression coefficients that vary over time and with each age is what we're calling attention. And really what we're putting on the screen in the plot on the right-hand part of the slide is how do these regression coefficients vary for each different age bucket, and how do they vary for different levels of mortality rates. And I'll just point out a couple of interesting things that the model has learned. You can see red is the most recent mortality observation. You can see that for age naught mortality, the model gives a lot more emphasis to the most recent mortality rate and less emphasis to mortality rates that are more out of date. For kind of young adult ages, it just seems to be a bit of a weighted average, and you can see that because everything is packed together. And then at older ages, we get back to the similar pattern as at infant mortality, which is that you give more weight to mortality in recent periods. So what takeaway can you have from this? The key takeaway is that this sort of explainable model shows you exactly which mortality rates are contributing to the forecasts. If you multiply those regression coefficients together with observed mortality, you get a slightly different picture that means something very similar. So if you multiply your observed infant mortality through by these regression weights, you see that the most important contribution to your predictions are the most recent mortality rates. At young adult ages, say at 35, you have pretty much a weighted average, and you see a pattern of the most recent mortality rate at older adult ages. And really the interpretation for that is where in past times you saw a very significant amount of mortality improvement, you'll favor the most recent age because that's the one that's shown the most improvement in your forecasts. Where you've seen relatively less mortality improvement, say at age 35, you'll take more of a weighted average. And again, this shows how to interpret the model. Let's look at a couple of results. Here's the out-of-sample forecasting performance measured by the mean square error for the Lee Carter model, a black box model, the local GLMnet, and a regularized local GLMnet. And what's amazing for me is that a very simple and explainable model beats the black box model while still being relatively simple. If you look at the number of parameters you need to calibrate for this type of model, it's 26,000. The Lee Carter model has got a relatively similar number of parameters, and the explainable model is dramatically better than the Lee Carter model. What we're showing in this plot is the log of the mean square error for the four different models, and we've ordered the country, so you've got the USA, Russia, Japan, we've ordered the countries by the size of the population. What you can see if you just eyeball a few points on this graph is the black box model in green and the two explainable models are roughly similar in terms of mortality forecasting experience. What's interesting again is that the local GLMnet beats the traditional Lee Carter model 75 out of 76 times. For the United States mortality database, also something quite interesting. What happens if you just take the model trained on the other data set, on the human mortality data set, and apply it directly to the human mortality data? quite amazingly, just that simple model transferred from one data set to another already beats the black box model. And that tells you that there's a really powerful way of learning across mortality data sets. So imagine that you are doing mortality analysis across 5 or 6 different products, maybe with different sub-portfolios. Learning across data sets is a really powerful way to make very accurate forecasts. Fine-tuning that model transferred from the human mortality data set to the United States mortality data set gives you even better performance, and then fitting directly on the United States data itself. So again, that just shows the how powerful this idea of transfer learning is. Just going to show a couple of the more detailed forecasts. I'm going to skip that one and look at the United Kingdom out-of-sample forecasts from all of our different models. Let's look at this for males on the right-hand part of the screen. These curves are the various mortality curves projected by the model. The red spikier curve is the observed mortality rate. You can see a few interesting things here. You can see that the local GLM net without regularization gets young age mortality wrong. But you can see, for example, that the Lee Carter model gets old age mortality horribly wrong. And this gives you a bit of a feeling that if you look at these sorts of forecasts, probably your best bet over here from explainability and performance is going to be the local GLM net with regularization, which follows the observed mortality very accurately. This is the error that you get if you apply these different models. And again, you can see error at different ages produced by the different models, which might show you that you actually need a different model for different parts of the age curve. Let's draw some conclusions and let's see if there's any questions from the audience. So what we've shown is an explainable deep learning model today that allows for important variables to be measured and to apply cutting-edge penalized regression techniques. This model provides really good predictive performance while still remaining highly interpretable in terms of time series forecasting. An observation that we've made is that transfer learning from one data set to another seems to be a really powerful paradigm for actuarial modeling that maybe the profession could explore more. And this might be an interesting discussion to have with the CSR. Can you train models on morbidity data to make better mortality predictions, for example? And then finally, your model choice can be guided by understanding the characteristics of your projected mortality rates. So with that, let me stop. I hope this has been of some interest, and let's see if there's any questions.
There aren't any questions online. Is there anyone in the room with a question? David, just 1 second run. We're just getting David the mic.
Thanks, Ronald. That was absolutely spectacular. It really was. It was really very impressive. Thank you. I've thought about things like this in my career, and invariably it's messed up by messy data. How can you take these techniques if you don't know how messy the data is? And is there any way to unmess the data using some of these techniques so that you could then have more faith in the outcomes? Thanks.
Yeah. I guess it's really interesting to think about what is the root cause of the messy data. Is it just you've got a relatively small portfolio, like, I don't know, a book of funeral policies with high lapse rate and maybe only 30,000 exposures, so you've got a lot of noise coming through? Or is it that your data is actually wrong? If it's the former, that you've just got a lot of noise in your data sets, I think a really good thing to do is take a pre-trained model like this, which we'd be very happy to provide you with, actually, and put in your messy data and see what it forecasts. And in all likelihood, because mortality across human populations is actually quite similar and there's relatively similar characteristics, it will forecast your data quite well. This is why I flip back to this slide. Here we've trained a local GLM net on the human mortality database, and it turns out to be incredibly good, even better than a fully trained black box model on the United States mortality database. So that would be on the side of things where your data is variable but correct. If your data is wrong, there are some interesting solutions that you could come up with using deep neural nets, and I guess it might be more appropriate to talk about those offline, but I think there's still some things you could do. if you can quantify why your data is wrong. Let's say you know, for example, that there's age heaping, which is what you often find with population data. You can easily sort that out using another deep neural net. So I would say, in summary, fit a model on a bunch of good data and just apply it and see what happens.
Thanks, Ron. We have a question online from Danny, who says, do we have enough data in SA to run similar models in South Africa?
Again, so let's say a similar model. Let's say by similar you mean population data. There really isn't good population data in South Africa, unfortunately. But what you can do is something very similar to what Gregory Whittaker did in his SAAJ paper, which is take the South African life tables and project them forward. But there's also something else that you can do that's very interesting, which is if you remember this slide over here, the way this thing works is you take a matrix of mortality rates, you fit a model, you get coefficients, and you forecast. But what's very nice is you can also work with these models backwards. Let's say you fit your model, and now you have a mortality curve as at 2022, 2023, from a mortality investigation in a company. What you can then use your train model to do is back solve for this mortality matrix in such a way that it gives you the past 10 years of data that are implied by next year's curve. And this is something I very much like to do. If any companies would like to share some data with me, if I'm allowed to make that appeal to the LAC on from this platform, it would be very easy to back solve your mortality rates and come up with mortality forecasts from a single mortality curve. And that can also significantly help with SAM and IFRS 17 risk adjustments. So if anyone's interested in doing that, that would be a very quick and neat way to solve the no data problem. The no, you have to have a little bit, so you can't say it would solve the no data problem.
Cool. Thanks, Ron. There's another question in the room, and then we'll get to the others online.
Hi, I'm Ron, Mark Keating speaking. I wanted to ask if you have a gut feel for the impact that you would see modeling future improvements in mortality happen, having on the pricing of current retail risk benefits, specifically like lump sum death. Do you think that it introduces a material enough competitive edge to, on a pricing perspective, to justify bringing in all this additional complexity? And do you see this coming in to the pricing area?
I think that's such a good question. I mean, let's say we're in the traditional setup that mortality rates are improving, right, which is where I think I'd always assumed South Africa was until I saw this. If mortality rates are actually getting worse and you're budgeting that mortality rates are going to stay constant in risk products, it's not going to give you more competitive prices, but at least you're going to make money, which is probably something important. In the case of improving mortality rates, what I would say is if you've got multi-year guarantees, allowing for at least some improvements is probably going to help your pricing. But it's been a while since I priced risk business, so take that with a pinch of salt.
Cool. Thanks, Ron. I'm going to take a question online, and then we'll go to the other one in the room. So Peter Carswell asked, is there a risk of not understanding why mortality improvements have occurred in the past and expecting those improvements to continue for too long in the future? For example, removing the impact of smoking. That improvement stops when everyone has stopped smoking.
So I think a great question from Peter, as usual. So I think this whole evolutionary tree and the Lee Carter model itself is really a model in a very classic actuarial theme, which is take recent empirical experience and extrapolate it forward. And we love doing that as actuaries. That's the chain ladder model, that's the Lee Carter model, that's the Cairns-Blake-Dowd model of mortality. What Peter's saying is, yeah, that's great, maybe your extrapolations are wrong. Some of the advances in mortality forecasting these days is to say, what are some of the other factors that are correlated with mortality improvements? So improvements in GDP per capita, reduction in smoking, etc. And some models actually try explicitly to build forecasts of those explanatory variables in a correlation sense into your mortality forecast. And that's a very nice paradigm. That's probably a good thing to do if you're going to be making very long-term forecasts. What becomes very difficult, though, in that paradigm of modeling, which is using explanatory variables, is you also need forecasts of your explanatory variables. And that introduces another source of potential forecast error into your modeling process. So I think it's worthwhile, if I needed to make practical forecasts in a commercial setting, I'd probably want to look at outputs from both types of models.
Cool. Thanks, Ron.
Hi, Ron. Andrew LaRue. I'm wondering how you think about COVID and the impact that has. So on the one side, it feels like you can sort of strip out a couple of years as noise, but whether the methodology actually can almost have a little sub-model sitting on top of it, like we did with AIDS, of the impact of COVID and strip that out. I don't know.
Yeah, it's such a good question. Definitely, if you just look at this modeling paradigm over here, where you've got a country variable and a gender variable, you could just throw in a COVID variable for the COVID-affected years. Another very obvious thing to do would be take up to 2019, forecast forward for 3 or 4 years, strip out the impact of COVID, and then have a separate model, exactly like you're saying, as an overlay that almost projects forward maybe to 10% or 5% of our overall COVID impact to allow for the impact of a disease that doesn't really seem to be going away, even though the pandemic is over. And I think you see some element of proof from that if you look at the CMR UK mortality analysis on a weekly basis, where they're still having excessive deaths, which partly can be explained by COVID, but also can be explained by a very overstrained NHS. So yeah, my basic response is I agree. You could have a submodel.
Thanks, Ron. There's a last question online. Why does SHAP making unrealistic assumptions in aiding explainability?
So what's very interesting is, with a lot of these things, without getting too technical, the way that you draw a partial dependence plot or the way that you derive SHAP is by assuming all your covariates are independent. And that is incredibly questionable and unlikely. What you need to do if you're using these methods in an actuarial context is make sure that the impact of that correlation between your variables is not strong enough to cause faulty explanations. And I think that would be a basic health check from a professional perspective to say, hey, if I'm explaining machine learning models with these techniques, could the correlation structure of the variables be strong enough that the basic assumptions break down? And one way of checking partial dependence plots would be accumulated local expectations, which is another similar technique. There's copular SHAP, which uses a copula to model the dependence between your observations as well, and that can help make these a bit more realistic.
Cool. Thank you so much.